everybody listening to the Indie Corner Radio Show. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I have an awesome guest today. I have Rachel Riley here. How you doing, Rachel?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So first of all, I'd like to, like, you know, chat with you real quick about, like, how did you get into the film business?
Well, I always wanted to be an actor ever since I was like 9. So I did theater and all that stuff in high school. And then I finally moved to LA in, I won't say what year, a long time ago. And I was lucky enough to have my brother-in-law be a film director. So he cast me in my first horror film. And that's, yeah, how I got started. And I just kind of started in the horror industry. And once you're in it, you kind of get used a little bit, you know, from other people. So.
Wow. Who's your brother-in-law?
His name is Benjamin Cooper.
Oh. How do I know that name? What has he done?
So our first film was The Brink. It was a ghost story. And then we did Primitive, which was like a creature feature kind of thing.
I think that's the one I've heard of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't remember what year that was. But and then we did The Lighthouse Keeper.
Oh, yep, man, yep, okay. All right, now I know. No, I have that movie. You know. Yeah, I actually got it, was a couple years ago at Texas Frightmare Weekend when I met Jeff and some of the people that are involved in that film. So it was really neat. But yeah, I love that movie. That was really good. It's got like Burton Wells and a bunch of other people in it.
Great. He's so fun to have on set.
Yeah, that's all I've heard. Like, anybody who's ever worked with him has said that he's, you know, very fun to work with and easy to get along with.
Has a story for everything.
Right. Well,
business so long.
Right. I met him once at a horror convention, and he was just really sweet, just really nice. You know, easy to talk to. You know, so. So you got started that way, and then once you got to LA, how was, like, you know, did you start getting booking work, or was it, like, sort of a while after?
I mean, I booked work with people I knew, not, you know, like, one wouldn't call it mainstream work.
Right.
So I've, you know, worked with a few of the same directors, a few of the same producers. I did do some work with The Asylum.
Mm-hmm. I know. I saw that. You've done actually a few films with them.
They're a fun crew. You know, every crew I work with is great, you know, and I've done a lot of some schlocky films and some fun horror films and some, you know, not a lot of mainstream stuff. But.
Well, I mean, is that something that you're working on?
Yeah, I mean, probably not as hard as I should. I mean, I've honestly not given up on acting, but I kind of just work with friends and stuff now. I don't pursue it as much as I used to. That's why I'm kind of transitioning more into writing my own things and directing and that kind of stuff. I'm tired of having other people be in charge of my career. And it's not like I haven't fallen out of love with acting necessarily. I'm just fallen out of love with the business side of it a little bit.
No, I get it. Because it's sometimes when you don't know what's going to be next or whatever. So for you to be in charge of your own career and kind of make it happen, you know, instead of waiting around for something that you're excited about, right?
And like even, you know, I'm not even in the project that I'm directing, and everyone's like, you're not acting in it? I'm like, no, because I want to direct it. I want to be a good first time director. So,
right. You want your first time directing not to have to focus also on your acting,
yeah,
you know, as sure. Well, which, I mean, I've done both. So, you know, I've directed and I've acted and I've acted in things I've directed, and it's like, you know, it is a little frustrating sometimes when you have to wear like multiple hats and everything. So I can totally get that.
Yeah. I mean, I've worn multiple hats on set. Speaking of The Lighthouse Keeper, I wore a lot of hats on that. I was the lead actress and I kind of took over helping AD a little bit. helping scripty, and it's, you know, low budget films, it's like you have to pick up the slack a little bit. So yeah, I did a lot on that. It was fun though. Like I would wear my costume, but then I would have like an apron on it that I would have like the scripty notes in. I would have like a walkie talkie, and I would, and like all the other actors were like, why is she telling us to get back from lunch? Isn't she an actor?
Like, right. were you also a producer on that, or were you just,
You know what? I can't even remember. I think I probably was.
Okay.
Like an associate producer, I guess.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you did a lot of work on it. So it got to be a part where you were sort of helping with the producing aspect of it, because you were just trying to make sure, it went well.
And it was, it was my brother-in-law and he's family, and I just try and help out where I can. So
that's really nice. Is your sister an actor or anything, or?
Oh, no. She's a business person.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I moved up to Oregon, and she works for a TV station up there, like doing like selling for the news or something. I'm not even sure.
That's really nice though. I mean, like that your brother-in-law is a director and everything, that you can kind of sort of relate to him and talk with him. And he must have helped you out in a lot of ways.
He did.
Yeah, that's sweet. So when you started to kind of get into the acting side of it, because I know we've talked briefly, like recently, about your acting and everything, and the fact that you do a lot of classes, and which I think is great. I think I don't like the actors who think they don't need class. Oh, I'm too good for a class, because I think everybody should do classes if that's what they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I love my acting classes. I think, and it's definitely, if you're not doing a lot in the business, or if you feel like you're not doing a lot of business, at least if you have class, you're still keeping it fresh, and, practicing your line reads and working with other people. And also you get to meet other actors, and it's, networking and all that jazz. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's the fun part about, I remember I was directing and I was making things. And then a friend of mine who's a filmmaker had said, he was looking for extras, and I was like, I'll be an extra in your movie. And he was like, you're an actor? I thought you were just a director. So I had to show him stuff that I had actually directed or acted in, to show him that. But yeah, I love to do that, because then you can go on the sets and you can meet other actors, or you can meet other filmmakers or something. And it's a networking thing for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not the best at networking. I would have a better career if I was, but yeah.
Well, I mean, like, do you think that's really like a skill that one possesses, to be able to network real well?
I think it is. I think it's definitely a skill, and not one I necessarily possess.
I think you're not giving yourself enough credit, because I think you really do, because I think, I think everybody is a little hard on themselves in this industry and stuff.
I guess the problem I have is I wasn't very good at keeping in contact with people that I'd worked with previously. And Facebook helps with that now, but way back in the day, when you didn't have Facebook, just keeping in contact with even someone that you did like a student film with or something, that maybe they could have did something else, but then you don't really know them anymore. But
yeah, I guess, wow, that is right. Cause like now you can just reach out to those student filmmakers on Facebook and be like, hey, are you still doing anything? Or, when can I see that reel? That's the hardest part as an actor, right? To get the footage for your reels,
Yeah, definitely from student films, especially. I had like this great part I did once, and she was so fun. It was so meaty, and it was like all like film noir-esque, and she was like so sexy and sultry, and I loved her. I never got any footage from it. Like, cool.
Yeah, it was like I played the greatest character, and yet nobody can see it.
Yeah. I don't know what they did with it. I don't know.
Aww.
I think so. Maybe they did it for class. I don't know.
Maybe that'll be one of your other projects that you'll end up doing one day, is, you know, making a movie similar to something that you've done before that you really enjoy doing that. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, eventually, once I learn how to direct properly, I could direct myself.
Well, that's right. Yeah. So, okay. So let's talk about that a little bit more too. So you are moving into directing. You're doing a short film called The Neighbor. You know, yeah. And from what I look like, I mean, I've only seen the Facebook thing so far, and I'm really excited to see like all the stills that you're going to eventually put on there of the film. Is like directing, was that something like you were like, okay, that's what I want to do next? Or is it just something like that kind of came just to be?
I guess it just kind of came to be. I guess back in the past, I used to just be, I just want to act. I just want people to hire me. I just want to work. I just want to do that. And I've just become less and less in love with that. Like even when I would get an audition, I would be like, ugh, I gotta go to this. I'm like, well, that's not a good sign. It kind of just morphed. And honestly, like this whole quarantine thing has helped with that, because I'm like, oh, well, I can't go do much, but I can write something. And mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that I would be a really good director, because I know how to talk to actors. I think that's very important for a director, is to know how to get the performance out of someone. So I think I would be good at that, and also just time management-wise. Like, I hate it when I'm on set and, like, nothing seems to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, why is no one doing anything? Come on, let's go. Maybe that's more of an AD thing than a director thing.
That really is. And you said you were an AD on the, you know, you kind of took over as an AD for there. So, and it was probably because you were tired of people just sitting around and, you know, like people say, like, time is money, you know?
It's like someone is doing something somewhere, or there's a reason that nothing's happening, but I'm always like, doesn't really seem like anyone's doing anything. Like, even on big projects, when I would do background work, I'm like, what's going on? Why are we sitting here for 5 hours?
I've been lucky enough so far that I don't think I've had any projects that I've worked on short, because I've really done just short films, you know, and stuff. So, of my stuff, and I've never once had like a lull where I'm like, why is everybody just sitting around? Like, usually I'm like, you know, usually I have a schedule lined up and I'm like, we got to get this done now or whatever, you know?
Shoot like 10 pages a day or something, you know.
You gotta keep going, you know. I know people can shoot a whole movie in like 3 days, and I did
Gacy. I mean, it was all improv, but 8213 Gacy House with The Asylum, we shot it in 4 days.
Wow, let's talk about that, because that sounds like that's got some stories.
It was pretty crazy. Like I said, it was all improv. It was like, basically, they had an outline of like where things were supposed to go, and like kind of an outline of the characters a little bit, and just you had to go from A to B, but all the dialogue was improv. And it was a horror film, a dramatic horror film about a group of paranormal investigators that go into a house that was supposedly owned by John Wayne Gacy.
Mm-hmm.
And chaos and ghost things ensue.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure if I saw that. I know they did another one similar to that. Like, yeah, I think the only one I've seen is like The Haunting of Whaley House, you know, which is also similar to that. Like, I think they also did it like that, where it was improv and they kind of give it a little bit of a plot, you know, and everything. And then you just kind of make it up. How are you at improv? Like, do you think you're pretty good at it?
I think I'm pretty decent. Most of my improv turns into smarmy and sarcastic, because just that's what I am. Also, most of my dialogue when I write turns into that as well. but yeah, improv's fun. Like, I haven't done a whole lot of it, but in my one acting class, we do some exercises and stuff. Like, I've never done like Second City or anything like that. So I can't proclaim to be an expert in it.
Right. You're like not an improv wizard.
No, but, you know, if I need to for a scene, I can hold my own.
Okay, that's good. I don't like improv, but I like writing down things and memorizing things and having things planned out, because like improv scares me, you know?
It's scary. It's like, it's giving up control, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard sometimes, but.
Right. Yeah. Cause you really like right then and there, you don't have a clue whether or not this is going to be like, it's going to work out even, you know?
Yeah.
So
I mean, I think like the hybrid of like, you know, semi-scripted, semi-improv, or just like when directors or whatever kind of let you make the dialogue a little more naturalistic to you. So it's not necessarily improv, but it's, you know, just kind of letting it flow a little better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. So as an actor, what's one of your biggest pet peeves as an actor?
Biggest pet peeves. When people when they aren't prepared, you know, I'm not saying you have to know all your lines. I mean, it is nice to know all your lines, obviously, but sometimes you mess up occasionally and that's fine. But I think when people just come not knowing anything that's going on, not knowing where they are in the script, where, you know, they're like, oh, what's my character doing now? I'm like, well, just read the script.
Right.
And you'll know what's going on. Like, what did my character do before this? I don't know. There's a scene number. Check it out. So yeah, just not being prepared. And also I think when they give everything for their own take, but then when it's your turn, they mess up, or they mess other lines up, or they just don't give everything because they feel like they have to save it.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that.
Like, yeah.
It's very selfish. And it's not like acting runs out. You're not going to run out with good acting. Like, you can still give your all, even if you're not on camera.
Exactly. No, I agree. I don't know if it's the idea, because I'm not always 100% ready for things as much as I'd like to be. Like, I'm as prepared as I can be, but, you know, obviously there are times where the things happen that you can't control, you know, and everything. But, you know, and I hate memorizing lines, even though I just earlier I said stuff about that. I don't like memorizing lines because it's tough. Like, it's not like my brain isn't like perfect like that. And I know there's tools and tricks to kind of work on it. I mean, do you do any tricks to memorize your lines?
Not tricks necessarily. I just kind of like go over and over and over and over it. And I tend to like memorize them as I would say it as well, which, you know, some people say not to do that. You just have to memorize it just, you know, monotone. And then when you do the performance, you add the acting, but I don't tend to do that. Yeah, and I was just kind of keeping my head like where my lines and the other lines are on the script, like in like on the page, like so that I know like how far I am in this scene.
Right.
And then I do tend to go over lines if I'm working on something currently, like even acting class scenes, in my head, like before I go to sleep. It kind of helps me sleep too.
Mm-hmm.
Just things fresh in my head.
Have you worked, you worked with Vernon Wells. Have you worked with any other like bigger celebrities?
I guess Ray Wise was in a movie I was in.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, he's great.
Yeah. I can't remember if he was even on set the day I was there. But yeah, that was Jurassic City, I believe.
Jurassic City?
Yes. Jurassic City. Yes. I have done dinosaur movies as well.
How many dinosaur movies have you done?
Let's see, I did Jurassic Attack, Rise of the Dinosaurs, Jurassic City. Maybe that was it. I don't know. Because sometimes they have different names.
Right. Like, I saw Jurassic Dead as the title, and I think that might have been Jurassic Attack or something. I don't know.
They change their titles and stuff. I did Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus.
Oh, that was with Urkel, you know, right? Jaleel White, wasn't he in that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Did you have any scenes with him? Do you know?
No, No, I was just like on a submarine.
Hold on 1 second. Sorry about that.
No worries. It's a good thing my kittens are asleep right now, or else they'd be running around everywhere.
Well, so let's, yeah, so you worked on Mega Shark versus Krakosaurus, and some other stuff for the asylum, some more, like, I know, didn't you do, like, Barely Legal or something, like, one of those movies? And
I didn't have very many lines in that. Gave a fake blowjob.
Wow.
And, yeah. playing high school, still.
Oh, well, yeah, I think you could still play it, you know, but yeah, no, it's, like, was it, there's also, like, MILF, I think I saw, like, or whatever.
Yeah, I had a lesbian kissing scene in that.
So do you feel comfortable with those kind of, like, with a lot of those, like, comedy things?
Yeah, I love comedy, honestly. I like it better than drama. I haven't really done any like straight drama. You know, I've done horror and stuff, which obviously has dramatic elements to it. But I'm just not drawn to just dramatic parts or films. Even watching them, I'm like, oh, this is boring. But I love comedy and I love horror comedy and I love horror and sci-fi and all that kind of stuff.
Right. So would horror be your favorite genre?
I'd probably go more like horror comedy, maybe.
Horror comedy?
Yeah, I like things that don't take themselves too seriously.
Is that what The Neighbor is? Like, is The Neighbor more, horror comedy?
It is, yeah. It's, because it has my smarminess in it. Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's not a lot of gore and stuff, but yeah.
Well, are those the kind of movies that you'd watch?
Yeah, like I recently watched Satanic Panic.
Oh, I saw that you guys are, I guess we're talking about a lot of Shudder movies. I'm guessing you've been binging on.
Yeah, we just signed up for Shudder, so it's like, oh, this is fun.
let's watch, because Shudder is a fun, there was one summer of 70 something, or have you heard of that? I think summer 80 something. Summer 84. Have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't watched that one yet.
You should. It's really good. I was very surprised because, I mean, I had heard great things about it, but sometimes when you hear things and in the industry, a lot of it is just hype on, you know, something that, you know, like maybe a group might like, you know, but you never know if you'll dig it. And it's got a lot of comedy and it's got a lot of horror and it's just really good.
Yeah, I would love to do like an old school slasher comedy horror. I don't know. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Like you would like to do like a throwback to like the 80s horror stuff, but like...
I don't know if it would do well in today's society, but...
Oh, I know, like, it's so hard, like, when you're writing your new short for Neighbor, are you, like, thinking about, like, will this work for today's, you know, like, society right now, or, like, how do you...
Kind of, I mean, and my protagonists are teenage boys, but, you know, and everyone's probably thinking, like, why is a girl writing for teenage boys? But, you know, men have been writing for women for years, so why can't I write teenage boys?
Well, I mean, when I first started, I wrote for guys mainly. And then I started writing for girls and everything after I got, like, criticized, like, why are you always writing for, like, the male leads being the, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, all right, I'll start right. Because, I mean, I generally thought I don't know anything about women, you know?
I mean, I think people can write anything they want, you know? Yeah. Not every movie has to have females in it. There's some movies that are great, and they don't have any female characters in them. And that's okay.
It's also right.
Have a movie that has only women in it and still be good. Like, it's, yeah. I think people are a little too worried about being PC, but...
Yeah, I mean, we kind of live in a time where just people are just, like, even if they aren't wanting to be PC, they have to be PC, because otherwise they're going to get in, you know, trouble by the PC police.
Yes, it's true. Like, even, so, I think I mentioned to you with chatting that I produced a short, like, a few years ago. We're doing post and finishing that up pretty soon. But the original story was my idea. And then my boyfriend, who is a filmmaker and a screenwriter, wrote it. And then, so now, and this was a few years ago, and then now we're finishing it. And he's like, this is problematic. Like, just the story, and like, we're basically chained up in our underwear the whole time. And
oh my God, yeah.
I mean, it's a guy and a girl in their underwear, so. But, yeah. So he's like, I don't know, people might think that this is bad. And I was like, but it was my idea, so.
I don't know. I mean, like, who knows? Because people, you know, like, who knows what the next thing people are going to be freaking out about? Like, that's how I view it right now. It's just, you just don't, we live in an age of uncertainty. We have no idea what the next thing is going to be, you know, that people are making a big deal out of, you know? And
what you like, and obviously not everyone's going to like everything.
Exactly. So if people don't like it, they don't like it, but, you know, you'll still have those people that do.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, yeah, I agree. I think that's the best way to go about it, because I feel like a lot of times it's almost 50-50 that some people like stuff that, you know, that you do or whatever, and the other people are not going to like it. And if they don't like it, that's okay, you know? Yeah. Like,
I mean, I'm sure most of my movies, people are like, what the fuck is this? Like, especially my Giant Ass Attack movies, but.
Yes, I want to talk about that, by the way. You worked with Jeff Leroy on that, and have you made two or three of them?
We've made two. Yeah, supposedly he wants to do some more shoots on the second one.
Oh.
And I was like, but didn't we finish it? Didn't we already premiere it? Isn't this done? They're like, he's trying to add more to it. But,
is it not long enough for something, or what?
Well, I mean, they're not quite feature length. They're either very long shorts or very short features. I think they're about like 50 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they're kind of in the middle of that. Like, is it really a short or is it a feature?
Yeah.
Maybe you can combine it into one movie.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, they're fun. I mean, they're just silly fun, and we're, you know, in our bikinis the entire time, stomping on buildings, swallowing people like you do.
Yeah, like, it happens every day, right? It's just a big giant person. Yeah.
They're very fun to shoot. They're dangerous to shoot, but very fun.
They're dangerous?
Yeah, he would build his city sets on his roof in Long Beach. Out of trash and 2x4s and whatever, toothpicks. Yeah. And then we would go and throw ourselves into them. Be thrown into them and landed on top of. And I got a few scrapes. I never got, like, injured, but I got some scrapes here.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, but it's fine.
But yeah, no, it's what you enjoy, you know. Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not like I fell off the building or anything. And then we also did my friend, Jason Cartillion, did a documentary on the filming of the second one. And so that went into festivals and stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So there's the filming that's gone to the festivals. Has the films, you said they got premiered. Did they go to festivals and stuff too?
Yeah, the first one did. And then we had, the second one in, at the Grauman's Chinese before everything shut down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, that must have been just, like, recently.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, I'll say maybe, like, a few weeks before things shut down, or, I don't know, I'm pretty bad with time. But, yeah, it was fun. But, yeah, so I thought it was all done, and he's like, let's shoot this other scene. I've built this stuff for you guys to destroy. Like, but it's COVID.
But, well, that's... Yeah, that's the problem with right now, is, like, how is that, technically, I guess on a low budget set, people, you know, aren't going to be looking out for that. But like, you know,
I've lost a couple cast members, even though I'm not planning on shooting until like September. You know, I've lost a few cast members because one, I didn't want to do it union because they're, so many much more rules when it comes to COVID. And that's not like I'm not going to protect people. Obviously, I'm going to have rules and everyone was tested and all that stuff. But yeah, just SAG is making it pretty difficult to do, especially on the lower budget level. So I had to recast a little bit, but I knew lots of actors, so I already did that.
Well, in September, I've heard like, you know, the people are afraid that this, that COVID's going to come back worse, you know, right? You know, like there's this, you know, fear. And so, like, I'm preparing for a bigger project, but I'm not planning to do it till next year, obviously, because it's just, it's going to, you know.
Yeah, mine's only going to be like 3 shooting days. And, you know, it's a cast of like 5 people.
Right.
So
it's not a huge thing. It's not like you guys are going to be, like, you know, in a small room with like a bunch of people, like all cramped in, you know, or whatever.
My crew, I would probably have like, you know, my DP and a sound guy.
Yeah.
Maybe an assistant camera. That's probably about it. Me.
Yeah. Well, that's the good thing about short films is that you can have like a really small crew and it will still come out really, really great. You know, yeah. You don't have to have this huge crew. Drives me nuts when you have a huge crew on a short, you know, because I'm just like, what do we,
hundreds of thousands of dollars on a short, like, what are you doing?
Right. I worked on one that I was just producer on and a creator of, and I was just like, it was a short, it was like literally like maybe 2 minutes long or something, 4 minutes long, and we had like a huge crew. But when I was there, I got fucking furious because, like, there was a lot of people sitting around, yeah. You know, not doing anything. And I'm like, what is going on? And they were paying these people. And I was like, what are you, like, why? Like, why do we need these many people? Like, it just drove me nuts.
Mine's going to be a little longer. I think it's, like, 25 pages. But I want to shoot it fast. So, like, the runtime won't be that long. But, yeah, but you don't need a big crew for a short film. You don't need like a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. So what's your plan for The Neighbor?
So I have my cast and I have my DP and I have my editor and all that. So I did my pages. So I'm building out my pages and then I'm going to do a crowdfunding campaign. Hopefully like mid-July for like a month. And then see how much I get there. And go from there, see how much I get for the crowdfunding. And then if I need to do more, maybe get some investors after that. But I'm hoping that the crowdfunding can do it for me.
Cool. I love that. I think that'll be a lot of, you know, getting the attention and everything will be the big thing, you know?
Yeah. And like, yeah, so I'm trying to do like, you know, get my pages and everything up now and start getting some people, some eyes on it before I start the crowdfunding.
Exactly. Pre-awareness, you know, pre-awareness. that's the business talk of it, you know, and everything.
I think, you know, if some people look down on crowdfunding, but I think it's great. You know, I think it's a good way for people to get involved with the project and to like feel like they, you know, are really invested in it.
Well, I feel like the biggest problem with crowdfunding is that there's too many, you know, at times. So like, you know, yours might be crowdfunding at the same time somebody else's crowdfunding or whatever. And, you know, people can only give so much that they can't give, you know, everything to everybody. So it gets kind of like a thing. But then again, that having more of those options, you know, really helps with people because like there will be people that are definitely going to give to you that might not even heard of the other people, you know, and things like that. So, I mean, it's hit or miss.
You know, and it's always like you're in your head, you're like, well, if I only had, you know, 500 friends give, you know, $20 or whatever, I could make it. But that's not how it works.
Yeah. Like, I wish all my 5,000 friends gave me, you know, $50 for my movies, you know, like, you know, reaching out to them is the hardest part too, especially if you've done, like me, I've done multiple fundraisers and, you know, people are like, you know, I already gave money to that one earlier, you know, I don't want to give money to this one too, or, you know, yeah. Like, so it's really difficult to know whether or not it's going to work, but it's still a great way, like you said, for people to be involved, but also for people to get, once again, aware of your project, you know, and everything.
Get eyes on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get my cast to share the page and all that stuff, and sometimes it's hard because it's like I was talking with my boyfriend and he's like, but they don't know if it's going to go. Like, they don't. You know it's going to go. You know you're going to get it made. But other people, you know, they get attached to projects and just nothing happens to them.
Right.
So it's hard to put yourself into something if you don't know anything's going to come of it.
Exactly. So, yeah, no, I agree. What's that?
It's going to. I'm going to make it happen.
Oh, yeah. And you have to have that mentality. You have to have that, like, I'm going to do this. This is going to happen. I have to do whatever I can, you know, to make it happen, because otherwise you're just going to sit at home and you're going to cry, you know, because like it's not, you know, what?
It's all the time wasted already.
Right. Yeah. I mean, once again, it goes back to that line of like time is money. So anytime you're not, you know, reaching out to somebody or you're not, like somebody told me, like crowdfunding was a like a full time job, you know, and everything.
Yeah, for sure.
So it'll be fun to see, you know, what you guys raise for that film and everything. And
you know, it's doesn't need much.
Right.
You know, it's probably going to. I want to pay everyone. You know, I want to pay the actors, obviously, and I want, you know, because it sucks working for free. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, if at most it would be like 15,000.
Yeah.
Because it's not many days and it's not a big crew and not a lot of locations. So,
yeah. Like, especially when you're out in LA, though, you have like, you know, are you shooting in LA?
Yeah.
So, you have to pay for the permits, you know, to shoot at places, supposedly, you know, depending on what you do. A low budget, you can sort of get away with things, I think, you know, like if you shoot at your house, I'm pretty sure the cops aren't going to bother you, but sometimes I've heard they do, you know. I've had people on my shows that have worked on, you know, movies in LA and their house, and they've gotten in trouble, you know, for, you know.
Neighbors called them or something.
What's been, because you worked on a lot of indie sets, what's been kind of the craziest thing that's happened on the set?
Craziest thing? So many. The most painful for me was drowning in real ice water.
Wait, so you actually were drowning in it?
Well, I mean, like, faking drowning.
Right, but...
It was real ice water.
In real ice water, your head was... In the real ice water.
My whole body was submerged.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's dangerous. Like, you know, like, yeah. Was there ever a thought of like, oh crap, if like something happens, you know, this is how I could die potentially?
No, I mean, I was like 20 at the 22 and I was like, yeah, whatever, sure.
Just pour that ice water on me, you know, get me in there.
I was in like in a bathtub full of, you know, yeah, it was good times. It's a crazy. Oh, it's a hard one.
Have you ever had the cops called on you? On the set?
No. Oh, I remember one time. We were shooting something out at, I think, near Vasquez Rocks or something, and we were shooting our little horror film, our little cast, and then all of a sudden this whole big crew shows up. They're like, hey, we're shooting here.
Oh, did you guys book it though? Did you guys have that place booked? No? Oh crap.
Yeah, it was just like out in the middle of nowhere. But like, we're like, we don't need anything for this. And then all of a sudden this other like big crew with like the big trucks and everything, they're like, yeah, we actually have permits. You guys need to go.
What did you guys end up doing for that?
I think we just left and found another place.
I remember we were looking for a graveyard and for a pilot we were doing, and we were looking for the graveyard and couldn't, like, I thought of one and it didn't work, you know. So we were desperately Googling graveyards, and then we found one, and it was in the most random ass place. Like, it was behind a neighborhood and everything, and like you had to actually go through the neighborhood. And then you went to the graveyard behind the neighborhood, you know? So I'm like, I kind of feel bad for people who live in that neighborhood because, you know, like people who go, I'm sure it gets busy with people going, this is a really big graveyard. But anyway, the point is like going there is just, is nuts, you know? And we did that without permits and stuff, you know? You're not really supposed to, I guess, but, you know.
I mean, obviously, like, you said, filming in L.A. is hard. So if you film, like, in a small town, like, most of my movies with Ben Cooper, we did in the Central Coast where we're from, like, right. The beach area. And there, the cops, like, are like, oh, cool, you guys are shooting a movie. That's awesome. If you guys need any, like, cops in it, we'll totally, you know, it's just, like, crazy. So they're like, yeah, this is awesome. It's so cool.
So are you and Ben working on anything soon? Like, are you planning to work with him again?
He wants to do a kid's movie that he wrote. And
you're going to play the kid?
Yes, totally. No, I think I'm like the teacher or something. Or a reporter. I think he's actually going to cast his sons as the kids. So.
Oh, nice.
It's all about nepotism.
Well, I mean, I think that's great to bring in your kids. Because, like, if you're a director and you bring your kids into it, it helps them get to know, understand what it's like to be on that. Then they can work on other people's projects.
Yeah. And they're the older one. He's already, like, wants to start filming stuff. Like, during quarantine, they were filming their own little short films and stuff. So he's
that's nice.
Kind of into the business.
Have you been shooting anything like during quarantine yourself?
We actually just are finishing up post on a movie called Social Distance. Shot it, all via Zoom, our phones, you know, basically. So it's all remote movie.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Was it easy to kind of do that, or was it a little harder to do it?
No, it was pretty easy. Like, the director basically would just read the other person's lines, and we would just call him and be like, okay, I'm ready for this scene. And we would do, like, a couple scenes at a time, and then he would go edit it. And, yeah. Actually, right before I got on with you, I was having to redo one of the scenes. I guess my dialogue was a little low. So I just shot it on my own, just trying to give spacing for when the other person was talking. So we'll see if it cuts in correctly.
Some more social distancing on just the talking, you know. But that's cool. I'm excited to see, like, because we are going to get a lot of that. We're going to get a lot of films, like, you know, already some are even out, you know, of these films that are, you know, and some are going to be good and some are not, you know, and that's just the way it's going to be. I mean, that's the way it is, period. You know, some people can't make good films, period, and that's okay, you know, like.
We saw one a few years ago. We went to Comic-Con and we saw it like at a festival or something. It was called Unfriended.
Unfriended, yeah.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
Yeah, it was really clever, and I like that one.
Yeah, that was all done through via webcam, I guess, you know, or whatever, like, and I think, yeah, Blumhouse did that, and then they did a sequel to it, which you know, just a sequel by name, I think, you know, had not much to do with the actual thing. Right. 'Cause I mean, if you know the end of the story, there's not really much you can do sequel wise with that. Unless you like redo it, basically remake it, you know, in a way.
Pull an Evil Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Which Evil Dead 2 is probably like everybody's favorite, and it's not my favorite. I like the first one better, but I would assume you love it because it's got a lot of comedy in it and horror.
I do love it. It's, I mean, Army of Darkness is great too, but that like goes like way over with the.
Oh yeah, that's like Three Stooges, like, you know, which they're fans of, and I actually got to meet Sam Raimi at a horror convention and everything, and he was the only person that ever like got nervous to meet, you know, like usually I'm like cool as a cucumber when I go and meet people because I'm not like thinking they're whatever, and I'm just like, he was the only person, and because Evil Dead is like by far my favorite horror film of all time, so you know.
Great flick. I should check it out again.
Yeah.
I should forget movies or forget everything really, but then I can rewatch them and it's like I haven't seen them.
Right. Well. Yeah, because if you haven't seen a movie in forever, sometimes I still remember, like, every line of a movie if I've seen it, like, a million times or something. But then sometimes I haven't seen something in forever, and I'm like, man, this feels like it's brand new, you know? Like,
I'll forget halfway through I did see it, and I'm like, oh, I did see this movie.
I've done that, too. you know, I think that's like, I think everybody who watches like movies like we do, because a lot of us, you know, a lot of actors and filmmakers, they watch movies not just for, you know, the love of it, which we all should have it, you know, should have the love of watching films, but also the fact that it's research in a way, you know, like it's what we want to see. And now that you're becoming a director yourself, you can like look at these movies and go, wow, that was cool the way they shot that, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to have like good DPs though, because I'm not a technological person and I don't know anything about cameras or lights or anything like that. I'll be good with the acting and directing my actors, but I need to trust my DP.
Right.
Camera.
Well, my advice as a director myself and somebody who's worked with people is, yeah, trust the DP, but also, you know, make sure that you have in your head, you have it kind of figured out where you kind of want to, you know, I don't storyboard or shot list. I probably should, but I don't, because I change my mind a lot, you know, when I'm on sets and stuff. So what I would suggest, and I mean, this, take this with a grain of salt, because, you know, whatever. But as a director, I would definitely work with your DP on, like, what you envision. And then trust that if they say, that's just not going to work there, but maybe over here, you know. I've had different DPs. I've had some that work really well with me, and who can, you know, basically tolerate me. There's one I've worked with like almost everything. Another guy was very easy. And then I've had a DP that thankfully wasn't the director on, but I had one that was just basically like, nope, we're going to do it here and we're going to shoot this here. And this is good. You know what I mean? And I can't work with people like that, you know, like
basically when they're acting like the director.
Basically. Yeah. But I'm sure you've got like a DP in mind or somebody that you know, yeah, you can work with.
We used for our short that we shot a few years ago. So
yeah, I'm sure he'll work with you very easily, you know. I think a lot of DPs do like working with new directors because it's a way for, you know, both of you guys to kind of come together, you know, because when you work with somebody like Steven Spielberg, you know, the DP is not gonna, you know, going to be able to get any ideas in, you know?
Yeah, there's not really much collaboration, really. It's just, he points at the camera.
Yeah, he tells you where to go, and the guy does it, which I'm sure they have it all mapped out and everything figured out, but, you know, I'm pretty sure nobody's going to question, you know, and so I feel like when you're a new director, there's a lot of collaboration that's easy to work with.
Yeah, Yeah, I'm excited. We're actually going to shoot a little teaser part of it next week.
Oh, nice. So you'll get your first, you know, your first, like, foray into it. So yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Ben, my brother-in-law, he suggested, highly suggested, doing a short thing before it, because he was like, well, how long is your short? And it was like, oh, it's like 25 pages. He's like, oh, honey, you need to shoot something smaller first for your first time. And then I was like, okay, well, you know, do two birds with one stone. I'll do a little, like, snippet of it for, like, a teaser, and we can add that to the crowdfunding and stuff, too, so.
Exactly, because, you know, the crowdfunding thing, a big part of it is visual. They want to see what you're able to do on, you know, and if you're able to make that for, like, nothing, basically, just get some people together, and you make something pretty cool looking, people will be excited about it. But, you know, there's a lot of different cool things going with crowdfunding, so.
Yeah, and I heard of a new one. I think it's called, like, Salt and Straw or something like that. That seems to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that one, too. I'm a big Indiegogo fan, and like, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, like, you keep it even if you don't make the money, and that's, like, a bad thing. And I'm like, it can be. It depends on how much you raise, you know, and right. stuff. But if you raise enough to, like, make, you know, a serious thing, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you make, say, see, that the problem with Kickstarter is you get, you know, if you don't make your 15,000, you know, you don't get the money. But say Indiegogo, you had set it for 15,000 and you get 14,000, you know, 500, you know, or something like that.
You can still make it, yeah.
You can still make it on that, I'm sure, you know. But.
Yeah, the first thing about Salt and Straw, it's a hybrid. So basically, if you get 80% of your goal, you get to keep it. Like, if you get 80 or more.
I feel like I've heard of this. So there's just a ton of these. No, Seed and Spark is another
Seed
one,
Spark,
too.
That's it. Sorry. Okay. Salt and Straw. It sounds like an ice cream place.
Yeah, I was like, wait, I think there is an ice cream place called Salt and Straw. That's why I was, like, a little confused.
Memories.
Yeah, there you go. It's like in Burbank, I think, or something, or in that area.
That whole part of the interview. Yes. So there's this new thing called Spark.
you're gonna start your own crowdfunding thing, and it's gonna be called Straw, and, you know, yeah. Salt and Straw.
We just crowdfund ice cream.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the one.
Yeah, Seed and Spark. Yeah, I was trying to remember because I was like, I think there's also another one called Seed and Spark. that's funny. Yes. But yeah, so it's so cool. Like, yeah, and that's the one I think, yeah, I think it does do, like, you have to get 80%. Yeah. But it's also from, because I've interviewed a lot of people who've done crowdfunding for their stuff. There's one that's very big on, like, the LGBTQ community. I think that Seed and Spark is very big on that. So if you have, like, you know, that kind of, you know, or, you know, if you did something on racism, they're about, like, the politics of the films or whatever. So I think that's great. I mean, if that's, if anybody has it. Well, I mean, yours is what? It's a horror comedy, right? So it's just, you know, going to be a fun. But can you tell us a little bit about it, though? I don't know if you mentioned it, like, what it was about.
So, let's see. I'm so bad at, like, taglines. basically, it's a teenage boy, and he suspects his neighbor might be a soul-sucking demon.
Oh.
So it's kind of like Fright Night meets Jennifer's Body.
Cool. I like that. That's a cool, like, that's a good way to, like, describe it when you do it on the crowdfunding campaign, like, you know, like, these two things, because, like, a lot of people like to hear that, like, the two different things mixed together to make it sound, oh, I've never seen that before, that'll be cool.
Yeah. I just really rewatched Jennifer's Body, and I love that movie.
Did you rewatch it to get, like, ideas, or did you watch it after you wrote it?
I watched it, like, after I wrote it and stuff, but yeah, I mean, ideas too, and I think it's a fun movie.
No, definitely. I haven't seen it in a while, but I actually do like Megan Fox and that and a few other projects. Yeah. But, you know, she's a Hollywood actress, you know, making, you know, different things. So she's, but that movie was fantastic, you know.
And it's just, that's the kind of part that I would love. Just so, she's so cool.
She's cool, yeah.
I would love to be evil. I think evil or bitch or whatever, they're just so fun.
You want to be like a badass character, basically.
Yeah. I mean, even action-wise, that would be fun, too. Because it's, you know, against type and against what my actual personality is. And, I mean, I guess I can be a bitch sometimes, but I play a bitch very well.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Are you one of those actors that hold it off, like, you know, you'll do it, you'll get into that character, and then afterwards, you're still sort of in that character?
Oh, no, not at all.
No? I've asked a person once about that, and she was like, nope. You know, she was like, I can just turn it on and turn it off, you know?
It's not you. I mean, I think with my view of acting, my personal view, is everyone has different things inside of them, and they're capable of different things, and just kind of pull out that part of you that is. It doesn't necessarily mean you are a murderer, but you know.
But you could be one.
Yeah. And also, just also recognizing it's not you. You know, people will sometimes like, well, I wouldn't do that. Like, well, but your character would.
Right.
So, I want to play a vampire someday. I miss vampires that were just fucking vampires. I miss, like, the raw animalistic, like, not even evil, just that's what they need to do to live.
And yeah, I agree with that. Like, I think, like, a lot of times people are getting tired of that, I guess, a little bit. Like, they're trying to do things that are different. And then, but the problem is we're getting too far, you know?
Like, they all want to be different, so now they're all the same.
Right, yeah.
It's like in high school when all the goth people would make fun of me or my friends for being exactly like each other and being sheep, when they're all dressing in black and they're all wearing black lipstick and they're all like, but you're all like each other.
I had this conversation with Rachel Bryant the other day on the show, and like everybody was dyeing their hair from blonde to red, right? Like, you know, because all their agents were telling them to do that.
It doesn't work anymore. Blonde doesn't work.
Right. But the problem is, like, now there's just going to be overabundance of redheads, you know? And so it's like, either way, you know, like, are you going to get lost in the sea of blondes, or are you going to get lost in the sea of redheads, you know?
And that's why part of the reason why I just got tired of acting. Not completely tired of it, but just, yeah, they're like, oh, you're also have some imagination. There's this thing called hair dye.
Right.
And I dyed my hair for parts many times. It's possible.
Yeah, exactly. If you need, like, if somebody doesn't like you, like, if they like you for that character, but they'd rather have you be blonde, you know, or you know, black hair or something, you know, they'll ask you, you know, like, can you dye your hair? And, you know, if that looks better for the role. Go ahead.
Also, like, tattoos. I have a tattoo on my back. Just so many times they've been like, oh, you have a tattoo. Like, if it's, like, for a nude scene or something. I'm like, here's makeup, dude.
Yeah.
Also, you don't even necessarily, it's on my back.
Like, yeah.
You're not even going to see it if you're just looking at my boobs.
Right. Yeah. So, like, I don't even know why people worry about that.
I think it's less so. I mean, this was a few years ago, because tattoos aren't, like, as, you know, they're more mainstream now.
Right. And, yeah, they're more mainstream. And the thing is, also, I heard, you know, like, Danielle Harris talked once about how she hates to do, like, in-person auditions because somebody sees how short she is, and then all of a sudden they're like, you can't play that role because you're too short for that, which I think is ridiculous, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, my my ex-boyfriend was too tall. Like, he was 6'4", and he was an actor. And they would constantly not cast him because, like, the actress was, you know, 5'3".
So he was... looked a little weird, maybe, but, you know, there's always ways around that, too. I mean... Yeah.
It's all silly.
You know, they can make, you know, the lifts to make them taller than they are if they want to.
I think just a lot of people just don't have any imagination, and they're like, well, yeah, you have a tattoo on their back, and there's, you know, 15 other girls out there that don't. So, see ya.
Wow. That's, well, I mean, that's sort of the film industry in some ways. Like, I think it's funny because it is one of the only industries that can actually fire you for your looks, you know, and everything, or not hire you because of your looks. And you can't be like, you can't walk into Best Buy to get an application and then they go, oh, I'm sorry, you don't have the look.
Yeah.
You know, right? You got a tattoo on your back. Yep, sorry, you know.
I mean, they're being a lot more inclusive these days, which is great. You know, their ethnicities are doing well, and, you know, it's great. I think white women aren't doing as well as they were once upon a time. But
yeah,
it's all ebbs and flows, so.
Exactly. Well, do you have any other projects that are coming up?
Let's see. So we already talked about Social Distance. That should be out soon.
Will that be online or will that be somewhere else?
I'm not sure what his plan is to release it, honestly. I mean, yeah, eventually it'll probably be online. Let's see. And then, yeah, the Giantess Attack movie. I guess we'll be finishing it soon.
Nice.
That's Giantess Attack versus Mechafembot.
Nice. Can we get the original Giantess Attack on DVD, do you know?
I believe so. Yes. That is available. Giantess Attack.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Just one, you know, solid thing. One attack.
Just one attack. Giantess Attack. Yes. See me in a bolt gold bikini. All my glory.
Nice. That sounds like a Princess Leia style or something.
Yeah, it was a very low-cut bikini that had to be taped.
Sounds like fun. Like, I mean, I enjoy those kind of things where they're just throwbacks to, like, the, you know, the attack of the 50-foot centerfold or whatever, you know?
That and, like, Power Rangers morphed.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
But yeah, because, like, we were basically, like, washed up actors on, like, a Power Rangers-type show. And then we become giant because an alien thinks that we're actually superheroes.
Nice.
Yes. And then we're not superheroes. We're washed up, selfish, annoying actors and then destroy Hollywood.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I love it. I can't wait to hear more about it or see it eventually if I can. If I can find it sometime, I'll probably check it out.
Yeah, I think the first one is on DVD.
Nice. Do you own a lot of the DVDs of the movies you have?
Yeah, somewhere.
Okay.
Somewhere.
They're around. That's cool.
Our apartment's pretty messy, so they're probably hiding somewhere.
Okay. Well, there you go. Do you watch a lot of them, like, over and over, or, like, you know?
No. I'm not one to, like, not want to watch myself. But I don't go out of my way to, like, I go to the premieres and stuff like that, but I don't sit at home and watch myself.
Well, very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. How can people reach you if they'd like to contact you?
So my Instagram is @RachelRileyLA, and my Twitter is also @RachelRileyLA.
Nice. All you need is a website, like RachelRileyLA.com.
I have RachelRiley.net, but it's a little defunct.
Right.
It's a little sad looking.
Oh, it's so hard to keep up with a lot of these websites and stuff, you know, so I understand.
Social media, like, do you really need a website anymore?
Yeah, a lot of times people just use it just to, you know, to send all the links to just, you know, to put all the links on one thing so people can, but then again, all they have to do is probably Google your name and everything, and they can probably find all your,
I mean, there's another Rachel Riley out there. She's in England, and she is the host of Countdown, some, like, game show or something.
Oh, wow. Does she ever get mad, like, that you guys get confused?
I don't know. She's in England, so I've never talked to her, but, yeah, she pops up, you know, when you type in Rachel Riley on, like, IMDb and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's the first one that pops up, I think, right? Because you're... What?
I'm like, damn her, just because she's older and got to start sooner.
Do you have to, like, I guess if... At maybe some point, you might have to, like, put your middle initial in there or something so people know the difference between you and her.
Yeah, because, I mean, I have been, there's some IMDb credits that I wasn't in, and I don't think it was her that they tried to, I don't know, it was some confusion. I was like, I wasn't, okay, whatever. Like, and I've tried to, like, tell IMDb that I'm not actually in this, they just never do anything.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't even know how many people they actually have that work for them, because sometimes it does take, like, forever for them to, like, update things or whatever.
And I'm just like, well, I guess it's just adding to my number of credits. Cool.
You know, well, that must be fun when people just ask you, oh, what about this movie? You're like, no, was not in that.
No.
That was not me.
Yes, no.
You know, but yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and chatting with me. I'm really looking forward to seeing everything that you've been doing. So.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was so fun.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll definitely have you back on another show at some point later.
Hey.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Bye.